Open up to Genesis chapter 37, and I want to tell you a pretty familiar story that you know about a young man who was totally forsaken, just like these girls were. Of course, you probably know by now his name was Joseph, son of Jacob. Let me read with you chapter 37 of Genesis, first of all, down through verse 4. And Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Joseph, or Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, I'll talk about that in a minute, and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought his father their evil report. So I don't know what they had been doing, we aren't told, but they weren't behaving like children of God. Now Israel, that's the spiritual name that God gave Jacob the night after they wrestled together as he came back. But Israel loved Joseph more than all his children. Now, you've heard of people showing favoritism toward one child over another. That can be bad, and it can influence kids for their whole lives. But it did more than that, because you'll see in a minute, it can lead to disastrous results. Because he was the son of his old age, and also he was the son of Rachel, the one Jacob first wanted to marry, a beautiful woman. And he made Joseph a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. So part of the problem is daddy here making this coat, which was really something glorious, and like elevate him above his 10 older brothers. Look back in Genesis 35 and we'll see. This is what you call a dysfunctional family. At the end of chapter 35, verse 22, it says the sons of Jacob were 12. Now Leah, if you remember the Bible story, Jacob wanted to marry Rachel, but Laban, the father of Rachel, tricked him, and he had to marry Leah, her older sister, first. And so she had more children than Rachel did. She had Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and Simeon, and Levi, and Judah, and Issachar, and Zebulun. It wasn't until much later that Rachel had Joseph, who was the 11th, of the 12 sons, and Benjamin, who was the final son. And during her giving childbirth, Rachel died. Then the sons of Bilhah, she was Rachel's handmaid. And back in those days, which wasn't wise even then, you were allowed to have your handmaid become sort of a semi-wife to your husband. And she bare him two children, Dan and Naphtali. And then the handmaid of Leah, Zilpah, she also bare some sons to Jacob, Gad and Asher. So here we have 12 sons born to four different women. And all of a sudden, Jacob decides to honor his 11th son and made him this glorious coat of many colors. Then, reading in verse 5, and we'll read it down through verse 11. And he said unto him, hear, I pray you, this dream. I'm sorry. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren. If I could fault Joseph for one thing, it was not having the wisdom not to say anything to his brothers about this. He believed the dream came from God, which it did, but to tell it to brothers who already hated you, for being honored with this coat of many colors was not a wise idea. But Joseph dreamed a dream. He told it to his brethren, and they hated him the more. He said unto them, "Hear, I pray you, this dream that I have dreamed. For ho, we were binding sheaves," sheaves is probably of wheat, "and lo, my sheaf arose and stood upright, and behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance," or bowed, "to my sheaf." And his brethren said to him, "Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. But that wasn't all. God gave him another dream. And he dreamed yet another dream and told it to his brethren and said, "Behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance or bowed before me." And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, "What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow ourselves to thee before the earth?" And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. Would you agree that that was not a wise thing to share? Even though it had to be one of the highlights of young Joseph's life. And as I said, he was 17 at the time this happened. Well, beginning in verse 12, Jacob had sent 10 of his sons out to guard his sheep, and they went for some reason about 50 miles northwest of Hebron, where they lived, to a land called Shechem. And that was not exactly a friendly area. Verse 12, "And his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel," or Jacob, "said unto Joseph, Do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said unto him, Here I am." He was a very obedient boy. And he said to him, "Go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again." Because remember the earlier report, four of the brothers had been tending sheep and they got into some kind of a trouble, doing something they shouldn't have done. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. Remember, as I said, this was 50 miles. And a certain man found him. And again, that might sound like coincidence, because the sons of Jacob had moved where they were shepherding the sheep, moved from Shechem to another town. But God had a certain man find Joseph. And behold, he was wandering in the field, and a man asked him, saying, "What seekest thou?" And he said, "I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks." And the man said, "They are departed hence, for I heard them say, Let us go to Dothan." Now that was something about 20 more miles northwest of the land of Hebron. And so Jacob went after his brethren, and he found them in Dothan. Now remember, this is 70 miles from home. I don't know how long it took Joseph, but he expected he would just have a normal contact with his brothers, but he was wrong. Reading in verse 18. "And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, Behold, this dreamer cometh." What a way to remember your brother. "This dreamer cometh." Excuse me. "Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say to father, Some evil beast has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams." So I think that proves right there that showing favoritism and saying you've got a special dream from God is not a wise thing to share with your brothers. And Reuben, the oldest brother, heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands, and he said, "Let us not kill him." And Reuben said, "Shed no blood, but cast him in this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid them out of their hands to deliver him to his father again." So Reuben said, "Let's put him in this pit instead of killing him." And Reuben had the plan to go back later to release Joseph and take him back home. Well, that didn't work out so well. Verse 23, it came to pass when Joseph was come to his brethren, they stripped Joseph out of his coat. You think that's a fancy coat? Well, we're taking it. His coat of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into a pit. This would be a cistern, but the pit was empty. There was no water in it. I don't know whether it would have made any difference if there was water in it or not. They were just ready to get rid of him, whether he would go down in the pit and just die down there or drown in the water. Then they sat down to eat bread. You see how concerned they were. And they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. These Ishmaelites, they're also called Midianites in this passage, were Canaanite tribes who were not godly people, and they made a regular route that would pass right through this area of Dothan. So you see, God had that in his plan, that they would pass by. And the brothers, Judah, second oldest, said to his brethren, "What profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother in our flesh." Wasn't that nice of them? Well, he is, after all, blood, our part of our family. And his brethren were content. Then there passed by Midianites, merchantmen, and they drew him and lifted Joseph up out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. Somebody said that would be about a year's wages for one or two shepherds. But they were glad to get anything for him. And then the Ishmaelites brought Joseph down to Egypt. Now Reuben came back. Reuben returned from wherever he had gone. And behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent or tore his clothes, which was a sign of grief. And he returned to his brethren and said, "The child is not. Whither shall I go?" Well, then he joined in their plan. They took Joseph's coat, dipped a kid of the goats, and dipped the blood in a coat in the blood. And they sent the coat of many colors and brought it to their father and said, "This have we found." And he said, "This have we found. Know not whether it be your son's coat or no." And they knew full well that it was. And Jacob knew it. And he said, "It is my son's coat. An evil beast hath devoured him, and Joseph is without doubt rent or torn in pieces." And Joseph, again, showing great sorrow, rent or tore his clothes, put sackcloth upon his loins, and mourned for his son many days. Many days is an under-exaggeration. Do you know how long it was from the time Jacob sent Joseph off to check into his brothers, and then they came back until he saw him again? 22 years. And all that time, Joseph was mourned by his father who loved him the most. And then the chapter ends, the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. Abandoned? I mean, just the first step of dropping him into this pit would make him feel abandoned enough. And he probably heard them talking about having him killed before they sold him to some pagans. Say, "You take him where you want, just give us some money for him." And I can't imagine, I don't know whether you can remember when you were 17 or not, but can you imagine something like that happening to you? Your own family turning on you and ready to kill you. And you'd be wondering, "Now, God, you gave me these dreams, and you said one day my brothers and even my father will bow down before you. How's that going to happen? Here I am on my way to a land that I don't know anything about, except I know it's not a land of godly people." But that wasn't all for Joseph. If you'd move over with me to chapter 39, now Aaron covered this just a few weeks ago, but the second abandonment was once he was a servant. Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, like it said at the end of chapter 37, which had brought him down thither. But look at that next sentence. That is key. And the Lord was with Joseph. Do you realize that's the first time you see Lord is all capital letters? Every time you see that in the Old Testament, that is Yahweh, or what we would pronounce sometimes as Jehovah, God's personal name, his covenant name with his people Israel. This is the first time it's used. But the Lord lets us know that he was with Joseph. So somehow, this was part of his plan. And he was a prosperous man. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian, and the master saw that the Lord was with him. Now, that's a testimony right there to show you what kind of a fellow Joseph was, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand, and Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him and made him overseer over his house and all that he had put into his hand. A 17-year-old boy, and we don't know how long he was a servant to Potiphar, but here he was, so reliable, so conscientious, so trustworthy, that he put him as the, you might say, the foreman over his whole household. And it came to pass, verse 5, from the time that he made him overseer in the house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. God can do that. Sometimes just by our presence and our testimony, God can use that to bless those that we're with. And that's what happened here. There wasn't any other reason for God to bless this heathen Egyptian. The blessing of the Lord, and there it is again in all capital letters, was upon all that he hath in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. In other words, he didn't have to pay attention to anything. Joseph would just handle things. And then, you ever hear anybody say it's not always a blessing to be a good-looking person? Don't you laugh at that, Charlie. You have no idea about that, do you? But Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored, and that's what it meant. He took after his beautiful mother, Rachel, and he was a handsome young man. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph. And she said, lie with me. Now, she had to be an older woman, what we might call a cougar today. And she said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in his house than I. Neither kept anything back from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness, and notice this, and sin against God? Folks, we have to remember when we sin, it's just not against another person or a group of people or against our society, but it's against God, especially if you're a child of his. And you know the rest of the story. As it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie with her or be with her. He stayed out of her way. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, but there was none of the men of the house there within. She was a schemer. And she caught him by the garment, his outer robe, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. He was going to do anything he could to avoid this temptation and this sin with this woman. And we'll move over to verse 16. She had spread the word once some of the other people came back into the house. In verse 16, and she laid up his garment by her until his Lord came home. She wasn't going to take this rebuff from Joseph. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us. See, she was trying to place some of the blame on her husband, Potiphar. You're the one that bought this young man, brought him to us, and he came in to mock me. And it came to pass as I lifted up my voice and cried that he left his garment with me and fled out. Now, what's Potiphar supposed to do? Believe his wife, and I think if he'd been married to her any number of years, that he would know she had some problems sometimes telling the truth. But what's he going to do? Believe her or believe this Hebrew young man, his testimony? So it said in verse 19, it came to pass when his master heard the words of his wife, which he spake unto him, saying, after this manner that did thy servant unto me, that his wrath was kindled. And some believe that it was kindled at the situation where this reliable young man who had been his overseer, his foreman, was now in this situation that he had to do something to punish him. And his master took him and put him in the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. Now, we don't know how many years Joseph was serving Potiphar before this incident. But here's incident number two, where it feels like to Joseph, he had been abandoned. And he hadn't done anything wrong. He hadn't even bragged about anything like he did with his brothers. But again, I look back to verse 2, and the Lord, Jehovah, Yahweh, was with Joseph. That was his only encouragement, that he had to see that God was using him and God was blessing him. Well, quickly on to the third incident, beginning in verse 21. And the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So he gets thrown into the prison. By the way, one commentator said, Joseph should have had capital punishment here. If any Hebrew would do something like this to an Egyptian or an Egyptian's wife, he should have been slain, not just cast into prison. And it wasn't just any prison, but it was the prison of the keeper of king's prisoners. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord, here it is again, the Lord was with him. That which he did, the Lord made to prosper. Now, I think it would be some encouragement to me if I was going through two things like that. One, being betrayed by my brothers and them ready to give me to be killed or to be sold. And here now, his boss's wife lying about him wanting to have relations with her. And yet, the Lord was with him. This was all part of God's plan, eventually, for Joseph. But Joseph didn't know it. He had to have the faith of a saint, you might say. You ever hear that? Boy, they have to have the faith of a saint. Twice now, he did what he was supposed to do, and all it did was drop him lower from a pit to a dungeon. By the way, one of the places that comments on this refers to this prison as a pit. It wasn't some nice little jailhouse. Anyway, in chapter 40, which we'll only read a few parts of for the sake of time, because I want to share with you seven things we need to remember when we feel abandoned. And so we'll get to those and run through them quickly. Came to pass after these things that the butler, that was somebody who was one who tended to the personal needs of the Pharaoh, the commander of Egypt, and also he was the one who would take a sip of something, of any cup of anything, before his master did. So if anybody had poisoned it, he would die and not his master. Well, anyway, he did something that offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was wroth against him, the chief of the butlers, and also against the chief of the bakers. And he put them at ward in the house of the captain of the guard and into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. And look at this verse. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with him, and he charged him and continued a season in ward. He charged Joseph with the watch care over these two officers of his court. Well, anyway, both of the men dreamed a dream. We won't take time to read that. And I love what Joseph says at the end of verse 8. He saw them looking cast down because they had each had a dream, different, of course. And he said to them, when he found out they had dreamed dreams, "Do not interpretations belong to God?" He realized that even the dreams that he had to come from God, not himself. And the chief butler told his dream to Joseph. He said, "In my dream, a vine was before me, and in the vine there were three branches, and it was as though it budded, and the blossoms shot forth, and the clusters thereof brought ripe grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand. I took the grapes, pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand." And God gave Joseph the interpretation. This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore thee unto thy place. And thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when thou wast his butler. Now, just giving you a little run through to save some time. The baker had a dream also. But in 3 days, Joseph said, "Your dream means you're going to be killed." But listen to the last couple of verses that we want to read here. "But think on me when it shall be well with you," in verse 14. "And show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me into Pharaoh. When you do get released, as God has said you would, and you get restored to your position, remember me. Put in a good word for you. For indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing they should put me into the dungeon." And the butler apparently responded, "You better bet that I will." Look down at the last verse of that chapter, 39:23. "Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him after he was released and restored to his position. And it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed," and he had these dreams, and long story short, Joseph was eventually called to interpret those dreams, and it led to a great exaltation, which was God's plan after all, that he would be able to feed the people of Egypt. You know the plan, 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. And that was also God's plan to bring his brothers and his father down to the land of Egypt so they would have food. But the third thing is here, after he had done this favor to the chief butler, 2 more years he had to stay in prison. People let Joseph down every opportunity they had. But God was with him. Amen? Now I want to share with you 7 things. If you can jot these down quickly enough, that would be good. But I have some half sheets of paper on the table right at the back of the pews back there. Please take one copy with you. As I looked through commentaries studying this story, and again was amazed, even though I had heard it a number of times in my life, there are some things that can help us when we get to that point where we feel abandoned, forsaken by people, and maybe even from God. First one is remember who God is. And that begins with Him being the Creator. And we find out He's all-knowing, all-powerful. He's present everywhere at all times. He's loving. He's just. He's merciful. And a lot of the other things that Aaron's been sharing, the fruit of the Spirit, we're to reflect the things that God is. Someone said, we can only define God by His attributes. I learned that in seminary. That's how you define Him, because He's so great. So we need to get in our minds not what's happening to us, but what our Creator, the all-knowing, all-powerful God, can do in the situation. So that's the first thing. Remember who God is. Secondly, remember how much God loves you. For God so loved the world, He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Now, Joseph hadn't seen this happen yet, but he had such faith in God that he probably didn't need this as much as we do, looking back and seeing the great love that God showed. The Bible makes it clear there's no greater love than that, that someone lay down their life for you. And that's what He did for us, is He took our sin burden. I have a couple other... Oh, by the way, the verse for the first one was Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. God says, are not My ways higher than your ways? And My thoughts higher than your thoughts? As He told Job in the Old Testament days also, Job, are you able to judge what I'm doing and how I'm letting you be abandoned and covered in boils and everything else? We don't think like God does most of the time. Also, that second one, how much God loves us, read back in 1 John chapter 4, the epistle, in verses 7 to 9. That's where it says God is love. He's the very essence and embodiment of love. So we know He's all powerful. We know He loves us. The third thing is, remember, God is in control of all things. He had to do a long, winding path to get Joseph to where He wanted him to be, so that Pharaoh could have his dream interpreted, and Joseph could be elevated to the second in command in all of Egypt. Amazing, if you think about it, him not being a pagan young man. God is in control of all things. I think you know a verse. Say it with me. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, them who are the called according to His purpose. How do we know that? Because we know God. And He has a plan, and He can work all things together for good. Turn with me just briefly to the last chapter of Genesis. When his brothers come down, and the story is too long to share right now, but he eventually reveals himself to them, and they were shocked to meet him, and they were saying, oh man, we're dead right now. What hope do we have? But in verse 18, his brethren went and fell before his face, and they said, behold, we be thy servants. Kind of like what God told Joseph, right? They would bow before him. And Joseph said to them, fear not, for am I in the place of God? Boy, if you and I could have that kind of an attitude today, what a difference it would make. Am I in the place of God? As for you, you thought it evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring to pass as it is this day to save much people alive. not just from the land of Israel, but they all ended up going down there and living in the land of Goshen for, I think, 400 years. So God overrules things, and he let these brothers know that. So first, remember who God is. Second, remember how much God loves us. Third, remember God is in control of all things. And remember that hymn, to trust and obey. If anybody embodied those principles, it was Joseph. He trust and obeyed in all situations, and he was in worse than you and I probably ever will be. I wrote down a couple verses here. And again, once you get a copy of this on your own in your study, you can add more verses to it. But Psalm 62, verses 5 to 8. Verse 8 says in Psalm 62, that's a tremendous chapter, by the way. It says, trust him at all times. It doesn't say any certain circumstances, but trust him at all times. So Psalm 62, verses 5 to 8, and then also Acts 5, verse 29. Then we come to number 5, the fifth thing we need to remember. Remember that God can use our troubles and our trials to strengthen us. James 1, verses 2 to 4, it says that God uses that to help us to grow and to bring glory to him. And so there is a purpose. It's not just why, what's happening to me? Why is God not helping me? Why is he letting me alone during this? Well, he might want to use it to strengthen you. And I believe that's what he was doing. He was strengthening Joseph for the task at hand. 17-year-old Joseph wasn't ready to help be the second in command in all of Egypt. But God prepared him, and God will use our trials to strengthen and prepare us. Then number 6, remember how God has helped us in the past. That is one of the greatest things. A couple of commentators mentioned that. Remember what he's done for you already. And if he did those things for you, why would he forsake you now? I was looking at Psalm 145, and I wrote that one down, verses 1 to 10. It reminds us of things that God has done and how he's blessed and how he's helped us so many times in the past. And he's still the same God. He doesn't change. So he'll do the same thing in the future. And then last, we're going to look up these two verses. Remember that God is always with us. These were some of the verses that Papa Leininger shared with his children. And Barbara says, I remember these when I was in captivity among that Indian tribe. Deuteronomy chapter 31, verse 6. Verse 6 of chapter 31, and Moses called unto Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and of a good courage, for thou must go with this people unto the land which the Lord hath sworn unto their fathers to give to them, and thou shalt cause them to inherit it. And the Lord, he it is that doth go before thee, he will be with thee, he will not fail thee, neither forsake thee, fear not, neither be dismayed. And of course, that was looking ahead to the conquest of the land of Canaan. And then finally, the New Testament equivalent of that is in the book of Hebrews. I'm sure some of you know where it is right now. Hebrews chapter 13, verses 5 and 6. I should have had this marked. Okay, here it is. Hebrews 13, verses 5 and 6. Let your conversation or behavior be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have. For he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Never. So that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man can do unto me. Will you bow your heads with me, please?